everyone. I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed, and I'm here today with Roderick Jefferson. He is the CEO and fractional GTM transformation leader at Roderick Jefferson & Associates. I am so excited to tap into the wealth of knowledge of enablement and go-to-market strategies here with Roderick. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Sandy. I've been so excited about this one. I'm ready to jump in with you. It's always good to catch up.
Totally. So, you know, I know you pretty well, but maybe you can give our listeners a little bit of a background of your journey and kind of what you're doing today.
Sure. I've been a sales guy for as long as I can remember. I started out as a BDR, did pretty well, got promoted as it happens to AE, went to President's Club a couple of times, and whether it happened, they promoted me to sales leader. I turned it down and they thought I was nuts. But I realized early in my career that I absolutely love the process of selling. I didn't get excited about ringing the bell and putting my name up in lights and taking down big deals. So I said instead, what if I could train the people that are in our region and then give my VP the best gift that I could give? One, people are getting onboarded and accelerating speed to revenue faster. And second, that he had to go get more funding for President's Club than he'd ever done before. And he said, if you can do that, you got a new job. So happened. It worked out nicely. Thank you. All right. And also I thought, what if I could be still close to sales, but I didn't have to carry a quota? Little did I know, moving into sales training and enablement, our quota is the whole company, as you know, across the entire GTM organization. So I've been very fortunate. I've been at some great companies, large, small. I've been through 14 M&A activities over my career. And now moving from sales enablement to sales productivity, sales efficiency, and now really looking at the end-to-end buyer's journey across GTM transformation.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's interesting too, just getting your start. Hey, you want to do sales? Well, you know, sounds great, but let me, you know, really dive into the training. And I can definitely say that I relate to that. I mean, I did carry a bag for quite some time, but I really became obsessed with, you know, how to teach and how to train and to help others become successful. So what's your favorite part about enablement in general, or, you know, pieces of your journey?
There's a couple of things. First and foremost, it's the people. You know, everybody wants to talk about the P's, right? The platforms, processes, projects, et cetera, policies. For me, it's about people. Mm-hmm. It's how do we get people bigger, faster, and stronger? How do we accelerate speed to revenue? How do we increase productivity and ultimately drive more revenue? But the best job to me is, and I call us the translators of dialects and languages. And what I mean by that is we've got to be able to speak marketing, product marketing, HR, engineering, ops, sales, et cetera. Take all of the information from sales, translate it into their various languages, and then take the information from them and be able to translate it back into sales speak. And so it really comes down to three things: communication, collaboration, and then finally, orchestration.
Wow. I mean, that's great advice. And there really is a lot of internal dialogue and different languages, even in the different departments with different stakeholders, the silos in the organizations. So how do you view revenue enablement working through that in organizations?
Oh, I think that it's one of the four-legged stools, right, that we've got to have. Of ops, enablement, sales, and marketing. Without all of us kind of, for lack of a better definition, locking arms and all rowing in the same direction, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Enablement and ops have to be literally finishing each other's sentences, where we're driving and influencing and impacting revenue. And I'll take driving out of that because we don't carry mm-hmm. a bag, but impacting and influencing. We can't move forward without all of the platforms and all of the tools and all the procedures that RevOps brings. We need not just a platform, we need dashboards to be able to show, and oh, I've got to help people with this one. Stop talking about smiley sheets and butts and seats. Those are not metrics. Let's get back to revenue generating metrics. And in order to be able to show and share that, we need the help from RevOps. RevOps needs us to take all of your policies and procedures and move those into actual execution and operations.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because if revenue operations and revenue enablement has the same goal, why do you think there's so much friction out there?
That is a phenomenal question. I think it's because, and I'm going to generalize here for a second. I think we have the same objective, but we come at it with completely different mindsets, right? For the folks that I've worked with, and especially the really good ones, they're very good at quantitative pieces. But as you know, on the enablement side, there's a lot of things that are not quantitative at all. And so, and I think what's happened is, over the last 5 or 6 years, I've watched this silo between the two, and it's because it's, should enablement report to RevOps? Should enablement report to the COO? Should it report to the CRO? I've even seen it reporting to project, to product marketing. It's not about where you sit. It's ultimately about the end goal, and then being able to reverse engineer it on both of our sides to get to that end goal. And I think the other reason is, we speak, but we don't really talk to each other, if that makes sense. And I think we've got to get from just speaking to going, hey, let's go back to the ultimate goal of the why we both do this. It's either to help our prospects and customers increase productivity and efficiency or decrease pain. And I think that would take a whole lot of the back and forth and the tension between the groups.
That's interesting. When you think about this communication versus dialogue, look at it as checking a box. Well, I let them know I need this dashboard, or I told enablement we'd be putting this change in the CRM. And that's not the same thing as having a real conversation and having real dialogue, building true relationships. So regardless of where the function reports, and, you know, it's hard, like, you know, we're all going to kumbaya, you know, and everyone's going to magically work together. Cause I know that's, there's never a perfect world, but it starts with aligning the goals, as you said. So wherever reporting structures are, heard you say, just really aligning those goals and then real communication, like real dialogue.
I think there's another thing that we could do to strengthen that relationship between the two organizations. And that is, when we are saying thank you to fill in the blank, whether it's to the CRO, whether it's to the head of CX, we should always say thank you to each other, which I don't see enough. Hey, thanks to ops for pulling together the great dashboards, for making sure that all of the platforms work, to make sure that we've got the right pieces in place. And then transversely, thank you to enablement for being a true partner, because we're not the fixers of broken things and broken people. We're literally a partner. And as I said earlier, neither of those two organizations can be successful without each other.
For sure. So how do you advise maybe a RevOps leader who might be experiencing some friction with enablement? Maybe the organization isn't fully aligned above, out of their pay grade, right? So a lot of things, you know, happens up in the ivory tower, right? How do you advise a RevOps leader to start to work with an enablement leader and really try to bridge that gap and remove the friction?
Actually, it's pretty simple. Because if you think about it, our number one ultimate goal, our number one ultimate customer is going to be sales. So where are we going to go, right? We go to the CRO together in a single meeting and say, you know what? Here's what you asked for. Here's what we are working on together. Here's what we have put together. And we want to jointly share that with you and make sure that what you said is exactly what we heard before we go and start putting this thing into either training or other assets. Guess what happens there? The CRO looks and goes, you guys are working together? God, you just made my life so easy. Right. And on the other side, it's now there's no finger pointing. Like you said earlier, well, I asked for the dashboards and I didn't. Well, I asked enablement to do a training. It's not about that, right? If we go back to a simple statement, I think it goes a long way for both enablement and ops. You train people, you train animals, excuse me, you enable people.
Yes.
It's so simple. We're not teaching people to roll over and sit down and all those things. What we're saying is, let's go back to our prospect and our customer. How do we help them either increase productivity and efficiency, decrease pain? When that is the crux of conversation, there's no reason to ever point fingers.
I love that. I've heard you say that before. Train animals and teach people. Enable people. Train animals and enable people. That I think that makes a lot of sense. Just even remove the word training from our language. I know when you say the word training to salespeople or anybody on the other end, like, I have to get on this 1 hour or whatever Zoom meeting and
here's an hour that I'm never gonna get back. And you guys are just going to make my sales cycles extend. No, you're not. Especially when we come together jointly.
Right. Right. Yeah. An hour I'm not going to get back and a recording I'll never watch if I found a way to get out of it. Right.
Bingo. So. Look, we were both salespeople. We remember what it was like. It's like I could either A, be prospecting or B, go and watch this hour long fill in the blank. Here's the problem. And we're both old sales folks. So this should resonate for both of us. We don't care about enablement until we need to do something right
yes.
now. Then we're like, oh man, I wish I would have listened to that thing that they did last Tuesday.
You know, it's.
And now they call us both and they go, can you help?
Yeah, like, I need it. I need it.
Oh, you mean that thing that we did last week? That wasn't important, but now it matters.
Yeah. And you know, it's. I just talked about this yesterday with my team. We made a change in the CRM and it was something that we had to fix. And it's very specific to a pricing thing for one of our products. And the idea came to me, it was like, well, let's set up a, you know, half an hour training session. And I'm like, well, why don't we try something different? Let's just record a quick 2 minutes on this very specific product and post it in our little channel. And because my philosophy is people multitask during these things. And when they actually need the thing, then they're going to be like, well, I'm not going to go find that 1 hour recording and go all through it. So give them the little thing, a little chunk, a little micro learning type of thing. Knowledge bites. I love that. I love that. And so we're, something quick, especially for boring.
We've got a TikTok, a Instagram, and a microwave mentality now. Right? So anything above 2 minutes, they're really not going to look at.
Yep.
And to your point, they're not going to go search through half an hour to try and find that 2 minutes. So here's another thing that I've seen that's working really well. Not just to give it to them in 2 minutes, but give them the video and also strip it down to just the audio. We're audio folks, right? We're podcast folks. So as you're moving around, you can grab that thing real quick. It'll go right into the brain and it'll lodge.
I love it.
Some people are auditory learners, as you know, some are visual. Give them that in both options and let them take it in and how it works for them best.
I love it. And so on that note, what are your thoughts on video during enablement sessions when you do have them? I'm trying not to use the word training.
Equals video equals enablement in my mind. Video is king. All right. Because it's going to grab you and you can make a personal connection with that person. It's the same reason that when we do podcasts, we throw in video like we're doing now. Right. It's because we don't know how it's going to connect, whether it's just the audio or just the video. But thanks to things like Reels, which I noticed that LinkedIn has Reels now all of a sudden. Go figure, right? They finally caught on. It's the way that we grab people. Right. It's the way we learn and it's the way that we laugh. So we can use video for entertainment, education, and then combine them for edutainment.
Edutainment. I like that. I like that. Edutainment. I'm going to use that. Good. So I'm just like, my wheels are turning because I've got lots of stuff I need to roll out. So as you know, I have the responsibility for both enablement and revenue operations. So I'm always thinking about how to engage people. So maybe you could tell me a story. I don't know if you have any stories with maybe something around enablement, that a challenge that you've run into, problem that you've solved, or just something from your experience.
I think I could probably grab one out of the air. I can go back to my days at Marketo. And I came in, and the problem was the fact that we had messaging that was not clear and concise. So we had folks all over the place on their messaging and positioning. And so it was literally confusing the market. Do we do this or how do we do that? So I met with the leaders and I pulled in marketing as well. And we said, what if we put together an accreditation, not a certification, but just to stand and deliver accreditation around messaging and positioning? Because it was just, like I said, it was a mess. It was all over the place. And I said, let's start with the very end. What does success look like? And then we can reverse engineer that, right? And the end goal was, how do we get surprised? How do we get people onboarded and get in to be productive more? Getting to that first close much faster. I said, okay, great. We all agree, everyone not. So what we decided to do from a process perspective was we put together project plan, of course, and including in that was accountability and ownership. Imagine that, not just dates, but who actually owned and who is responsible for this piece. And that actually worked out really well. Everybody agreed. We all nodded. So we moved forward and I said, let's get recording video of our top sellers giving the messaging. But we also want to get marketing to record one, because people are going to look at both of those and go, okay, that way now they're not trying to just robotically do the same thing, but they can grab some bits and pieces from both. And we'd use the sales folks. Why? Because we know who the rock stars are and they're going to listen to them before they listen to us or marketing. But we gave them an option, right? And then we went through, we accredited the first line managers first, because what's important to them is imperative to their team, right? And if they see them do it, now they follow. That worked really well for most. So I said, what if every Friday I sent out a dashboard that showed high, low, ugly? It was either going to be the wall of fame or the wall of shame, depending upon that manager, because that's who was accountable for making sure their team was taken care of. Oh, but another step, don't just do it. Send it out to them, their peers, and to e-staff. I didn't send it. The VP of sales sent it. Because now I'm not the bad guy for sending this out, right? I'm not there with the whip and beating them. Instead, I drafted it, gave it to the VP of sales, and then he sent it out.
Wow.
Oh, imagine, nobody wants to be on the bottom of the totem pole then. And that was just kind of one of those things that at the end of it, the result was this. When I came in, it was taking 88 days in the mid-market to get to first close. By the time we were done 2 years later, 2.5 years when I left, it was 54
days.
Wow. So now that put me in front of the board to go and explain how this happened, which I thought was pretty cool. But more importantly, it was, you think about, we always say we influence and we impact revenue. Right? Because we don't drive it, because we're not carrying a bag. But in this case, it really did influence it, because now we could say it took X amount of months before, or days before, months, times revenue. Now you've got 54 days instead of 88. Guess what just happened? The increase in revenue now.
Oh, yeah. Speed to revenue is faster than they're going to expand. I mean, there's just so much behind that and the approach that you took. And the common thing I see is where leaders will come in, especially when they don't have a true enablement function, they'll say, oh, well, we need to fix this problem. Our close cycle is too long. So we're going to get people sales training. And what you did was put in a full enablement program that really started with, you know, what is the problem? What does success look like? And there were multiple steps and multiple engagement points. And then on top of it, accountability, the leaderboard and the follow-up and the sales leaders. And then you enabled your sales leader by writing the email for them. I mean, sometimes they're busy and they're going to appreciate that. And they can, you know, you were, now there's ChatGPT. So you were probably like, you know, acting like ChatGPT back then, but, you know, but seriously, it's a full enablement program. That's a great example of making that difference. And the goal, which would be a shared goal with like revenue operations, marketing ops, sales ops, whatever the ops function is, everybody's goal is always a decreased sales cycle. Like where are deals slipping, right? And so that's an aligned goal. So it's following what we talked about earlier. And then you're collaborating with, you know, whoever's making those dashboards, or, you know, sometimes I'm sure you made them yourself at some point, but you know, how that all comes together is really what we think about as like a program, right? Everything is an enablement program, and there's so many aspects to it.
Thank you for that. And it actually became the first of. So now, as competitive landscape changed, there were a lot of acquisitions that went on during that time, right? Guess what? We did another accreditation. How do you now handle that discovery and qual, not disco and qual, but the objection handling? We did that. That opened up more workshops, disco and qual, objection handling, all those things. And it was literally the foundation was that accreditation. And we just kind of grew on from there. And because we were PE, it now got spread across the vista.
Right.
And people were like, how was that working? And it wasn't about the recognition or being heard or seen for it. It was, it just kind of made sense. Right. And again, it went back to those three statements of clear and concise communication, joint collaboration, and ultimately cross-functional orchestration.
For sure. Can you tell me more about the term accreditation and what differentiates that from like a certification?
Sure. Absolutely. So certification is a legal term, and it means now that's something that I can go put onto my LinkedIn or on my resume that stands out to the world. MCMC, Microsoft certifies, those kind of things. And normally it's your technical folks, your SEs and et cetera, that certify. Accreditation is literally a stand and deliver around fill in the blank. In this case, it happened to be messaging and positioning to ensure consistency across the organization.
So did you require folks in certain roles to gain that accreditation through their onboarding or send them back through? Okay.
BDRs,
got it.
AEs, SEs, and CSMs. And to your point, before you could even come to boot camp, it was a prereq for all newbies that had to accredit before they came in, along with all the other pre-work. That way we start at one, a standard baseline for everyone. And second, you're not asking all those questions that you should have already gotten in pre.
So sometimes when, you know, companies, when I've rolled these things out in different organizations, so you've got to get the managers to buy in and go through that. So did you have any challenges or how did you go about that? And did you have the managers go through it as well?
Everybody was happy about it and they couldn't wait to it. No, you know what we did? We rolled it out in phases.
Okay.
And in this case, we actually started with EMEA. Because we had an enablement focused leader over there. And we started to see what was happening over on that side. And now they became our cheerleader. And secondly, they were like, wait, we want to play with new toys too. So I said, oh. And then I'd go sit in on the forecast meetings and you start to see things are bubbling up.
Right.
Now. And so it wasn't me saying or my team saying how good it was. We let the data speak for
right.
us. And once that started to happen, and then everybody else wanted a piece of it. And at that point, our COO said that it's mandatory across GT.
Yep.
Again, not me saying it,
right.
enablement, but COO said. So now, guess what happens? What's important to your manager is imperative to you.
Yeah. Well, and this is a key point for people listening is your rollout strategy. So whatever the initiative is, the rollout strategy is critical because you want to get those early adopters and get them bought in. And if having, you know, whether it's a beta group or starting with a smaller subset, depending on the size of your organization, or getting some early adopters, subject matter experts that you can get in to help develop it as you're doing it or whatever. You have to really be creative with that to get that buy-in, because you know, it's hard to tell somebody like, you know, hey, this is what we're doing, you have to do it. It's gonna be a lot easier if they're bought into it and they it's their idea and they want to do it and you're solving these problems together.
100%. And also it stops enablement and ops from being the frenemies, yeah, if you will. Right? Now, once again, we're coming together locked in arms saying, this is what the CEO said, the CRO said, the COO said, we're merely the messengers. Yep.
Well, and there's nothing better than when the head of sales or even the CRO jumps in and does the role play. Like, that is the best thing ever, you know? And, you know, they can all do it, but when they get in there and they humble themselves and they jump in and they do it alongside everybody else, it's always a huge win, I think, and goes a long way with adoption when they do that.
Oh, it's huge. It's like anything. I played basketball way back. I know, a long time ago. So. But I wasn't making a face. And I coached, and the great thing was, okay, I want to show you how to do a left-hand layup. Well, you jump off your right leg, you lift up your left hand, you let the ball roll off. Well, they're going to say, okay, coach, show me. Either you can show them and you can get credibility, or you can say, well, the manual says, if you jump off your right leg, you lift your, there's something to be said for being able to show mm-hmm. it and execute on it. And in one of my other companies that I worked at, I actually had the CRO and the VP of marketing were actually the judges for the accreditation. We did a subset and we did them live instead of doing them in Seismic or HighSpot. We started out live first. Imagine you jump on, and we told you ahead of time, mm-hmm. but you jump on and you've got your CRO and your VP of marketing and your VP of enablement. And that's now your audience and your customers. How much more prepared are you before you go on that?
Right.
Right. Let's just say we didn't have too many. It wasn't 100%, but we didn't have a whole lot of people that didn't pass the first time.
You're giving me flashbacks when I was, now this is going to sound old. I was actually in the Bay Area and I was selling, mm-hmm. You remember Valley Yellow Pages? I was selling Yellow Pages advertising. Absolutely. When you got hired after your second week, you had a written test and then you had to close the VP of sales on, you know, whatever ad. They gave you like 30 minutes of prep and you had to go close the VP. If you didn't close the deal, you literally got your walking papers, your paycheck, and out the door.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was, we had 10 people in our class and I was 3 of 10 who made it that round. I mean, they bring in new people every, but it was a lot. I was prepared. Like I was going to close it. Like there's no way I was leaving there not having a job. But it's not like that today.
I would not consider that entertaining.
This is a little different today, but, that was quite a few years ago, but yeah, you're prepared, right? If you know it's coming and you're going to be prepared and you're practicing. So then you're so much more comfortable when you do it, in front of a customer, and it's like, we've all done it.
Yeah. But there's another piece to this too, though. The people that stood out as absolute rock stars in that accreditation, guess who now hit the radar of the CRO?
Right, right.
You're like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't know that they were that mm-hmm. good. I didn't expect that from this person. Or I expected that one to be a little better.
Right.
I had people that passed and came back later and said, can I redo this?
Can I do it again?
Oh, that is the best feeling in the world as an enablement or an ops person. They're like, I'd pass, but I know I can do better.
So you mentioned some tools. Tell me a little bit about tools for enablement, and obviously RevOps gets involved in setting them up and things, but tell me a little bit about some must-haves, and you know, you can use names or not use names, just more of the types of tools that, you know, if you're in an organization that's maybe not a startup, what do you recommend, you know, for enablement?
I think there are 5 tools that you must mm-hmm. have, right? And there's the learning and content management systems, things like, you know, Cornerstone, HighSpot, Docebo, mind tickle those right. Then you've got to have your prospecting in your sales reporting tools, whether it be your HubSpot, your LinkedIn Navigator, Click, Salesforce, etc. Mm-hmm. Then you've got your marketing automation tools. That's the Eloquas, the HubSpots, the Marketos, etc. Then you've got a plethora of communication mm-hmm. tools. And I don't know that we, wow, that is one of the biggest categories I've ever mm-hmm. seen since, for as long as I've been in sales now. But things like competitive intel, customer advisory boards, your digital sales rooms, your playbooks, your podcasts, etc. Then you've got those sales engagement platforms, the Allegos, the HighSpots, the MyTickles, the ShowPads. And then finally, the revenue intelligence tools, things like, you know, Course, Zoom, Gong, Clary, ShowPad. And those are your traditional. Mm-hmm. But the world has shifted. Mm-hmm. That fifth one is now, you guessed it, AI. Right. Because I think there are kind of six ways that I look at how we can leverage AI to increase both efficiency and productivity, Sandy. First is streamline lead scoring, right? On yeah. the front end by prioritizing all your leads. Based on, let's think about the simple stuff. What's more likely to convert right. and what will allow our sales folks to really focus on those, I'll say, promising opportunities. Right. The next is automated task management. Things like, you know, those repetitive tasks that we all have to do, data entry, appointment scheduling, follow-up emails, all that can free up time mm-hmm. now, right? Not just ChatGPT, but that plethora of AI tools. Something near and dear to both of our hearts, real-time analytics. Mm-hmm. Being able to provide our sales reps with real-time analytics and insights to help them identify the areas where they can improve their performance. And again, no smiley sheets and butts and seats. Make data-driven decisions.
Right.
The next to me is personalized coaching. There's a lot of sales managers. I believe only the sales leaders really know how to mm-hmm. coach. And that means providing personalized coaching to reps based on their individual strengths and weaknesses, not the way you used to do it or the way you've seen it or how it works best. The next is being able to efficiently optimize the sales process. That means creating things like, you know, proposals and contracts and sales docs and all those things. And finally, it's automating customer communications, mm-hmm. which I'm sure we're all doing with ChatGPT and others, right? And so at the end of the day, think about all the things that we do in enablement, things like certifications and accreditations, role plays, content generation, stronger collaboration, revenue tools, and ultimately sales templates. Those are game yeah. changers now. The way we used to do it, yeah, when we walked to school both ways, uphill in the snow, I know, I get it, right? The world's changed.
Yeah.
And if you as a RevOps leader or an enablement leader are not utilizing those five strengths of tools, I don't know what to tell you right now.
Yeah, yeah, you have to, because we don't need people fumbling around in spreadsheets and jumping from system to system. I think it's critical.
Well, they won't.
Yeah, they'll just skip they it won't. Or hold on to a deal or yeah. yeah, it's really a challenge, I think, for some leaders. There's a lot of shining objects, right? So having those core, you know, of all those, the six things, you know, the core tools for each one and making sure they work together. There's some crossover as well, right? So you mentioned a couple of tools twice, so you can kind of narrow it down to, you know, what is the slimmest stack you can get to match up with those six buckets.
Exactly.
I think is really, really a good call out. I will say I'm actually looking at a tool this afternoon. I saw it at a conference recently. I think you and I were at the same conference, and I won't say the name here, but it's a, you know, it's a coaching tool, and it's basically a role play with an AI. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost like a real person. And
absolutely. I know exactly.
Yeah.
What
and it's,
about.
You know, these are the kind of things that, you know, they're not must haves, right? They're not critical, mm-hmm. but in terms of shiny objects, if there's budget, because for enablement to, for programs to sustain and last and, you know, to have that influence on revenue that you talked about, you have to have the coaching and you have to have the practice. Absolutely. And the role play. And, And, you know, we have tools that can speed that up and help to clone a manager, essentially, because, you know, I talked to my closest sales leader, she's SVP, and she's got, you know, I don't know how many 20 some odd people. And she's like, I just want to clone myself. And it's like, well, you know, we're going to talk to literally a bot that we can potentially do that. And so I think some of those things are game changers, but we have to be careful not to, like, you know, chase all the flares and all the shiny objects and, you know, stick to that core. Yeah. But
everything will not work for everyone. Right. It really depends upon where your company is in your maturation cycle. And more importantly, what does your buying cycle mm-hmm. look like? It may not be the same as your friend that's over here or the rest of our enablement tribe. So you won't need all of those right. things. So make sure that, and we all know there is not a finite amount of budget right. in our world right. anymore. So make sure that you're doing not just your due diligence, but also when you're talking to those vendors, make sure that they fit for where you are right mm-hmm. now, or if you're in growth stage, where you're going to, not where you are today.
Right. That scalability, setting yourself up for scale. Great. What parting words do you have? Any words of wisdom that you want to leave here before? I mean, we could probably talk all day, definitely, for sure. But yeah, you've said a lot of really great things. We've covered a lot of ground, but I'd love to, you know, get some words of wisdom.
I think there's a couple things. One is never forget our why of why we do what we do. And it's because we're people, right? The second is I go back to what I said earlier, that everything should go back to the buyer's journey, and to remove that tension of back and forth, regardless of what other line of business. If we're all focused on how do we help the prospecting customer accelerate speed to revenue and accelerate efficiency and productivity or decrease pain, we'll never get lost in the sauce, right? And the third piece is, we talked about this earlier, and that is video is king. And I forgot to tell you, when you're thinking AI, there are a couple of really solid ones out there, right? NVIDIA and another one called Video with a Y .AI. It literally, and Opus Clips.
Oh, yeah. I use that. Yep. Right.
And they all do the same thing. You take this long feed and you trim it down into, guess what? Knowledge bites. Right. You can call them shorts, call them whatever you want to. It comes down to literally knowledge bites. And never forget, the people that are on our teams, they're not project managers, program mm-hmm. managers, instructional designers, specialists. They're people. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that piece. Mm-hmm.
I love it. I really appreciate you and appreciate our time today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Roderick.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been great. Always fun hanging out
with
you. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks everyone. This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed. Until next time.
This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.